for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Welcome back to Pleb Underground. This is episode 36. Always composing on screen. This time I'll try it on paper. Not printed nor unseen. Elites morally obscene. They can't continuously taper. They created quite the caper. Nowhere to go, so stack the dip. Paper planes fuel the trip. Soon time to go MIA. Time to take a flight. Sand, sea, time away. Pleb tacos Friday night. I'm a flow rider going ham like hard cider. Bit bull 305. Honey badger 615. Bitcoin only. Not on the fence. Fuck shit coins. Please take offense. Now NFTs too. Boycott conference? Flip back to the pages, analog signing device, keep building in stages, no alone you suffice, keep rhyming words, only sheep roam in herds, soy un lobo solitario, collecting coin, Mario. So-so memory and recollection, forget one girl, have a whole collection, can you find an XO that's actually unspent? An Easter bunny after Lent, currency attention, find one worth a mention. When a loved one is taken from us, there ain't no bigger test. Time with those you cherish, there ain't no second best. Always a cappella, intrinsic beat, back again, can't defeat. No intrinsic value, retorting, no hue. Ice cold, turning blue, lubeless flow, perfect mew. Do you get it, capiche? Too many just copy pastiche. Cream of the cream, perhaps no longer a dream. Working hard, stay humble every day. Becoming creme de la creme, not creme brulee. Can't get rugged, can't get burned. Can't sacrifice what you earned. Life in abundance, we got plenty. Enough for 10, enough for 20. Bong rips and buying the dip. Smoking joints and making succinct points. Burning the best bud, dealing with misconceptions and FUD. Time to get away, time to go abroad, debase the broad, raise the fraud, praise the Lord, raise the sword, strays on board, aim high, no turbo, all natural aspiration, crypto graffiti, mural transformation. Bitcoin Twitter, it's like an asylum, pump it up, like a plant xylem, sugar to my flowers, keep them flowing, back once again with an intricate poem. Adult men in wizard capes, soy boy lifestyle escapes. Bitcoin nominal, not ordinal, variable and categorical. Crypto industry is full of nerdy, dirty thugs. Even soldier boys done like 30 rugs. No carpet burns, they're used to being on their knees, asking for forgiveness, sorry, thank you and please. We're corporate free, so no one permissioned this. Hodled Bitcoin is permissionless. Free of charge, not commissioned this. On your home screen, not in cinemas. All new magic, no manner, never done in a tragic manner, spontaneous planner, little sunshine, I'm Tanner. I'm not from Brooklyn, but I can't stop cooking, city lights, wide eyes, can't stop looking, saucy fire straight from hell's kitchen, triggered tweeters, can't stop bitching, find a new muse that will amuse, not blow a fuse, talk straight, don't confuse, can't sit around worrying what will unfold or you'll waste your life when you should mold her. Some say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, some files x-rated, call Mully and Scolder. She liked the shoulders, big hands to hold hers, staying up late, getting a little tired. What does it matter if you're feeling inspired? Some girls are radiant, some radioactive, activity like Beck or L. Keep clicking, Becquerels, rising up, eye of the tiger. We're all keeping account with a counter, Geiger. Nuclear family lifestyle depleted, the a nuclear network, still undefeated, stronger each week, never gone, but I'm back, wearing represent head to toe in white and black. You know shit coinery is black or white, pleb underground, not one shit coin in sight, pleb underground, we put up the fight, Bitcoin only, others can alight. Sometimes I wonder how many coins gone. Please like and subscribe at fuckshitcoins.com.
Walton, I've said this like 3 weeks in a row, I don't see how you could outdo yourself, and somehow you do. That was freaking absolutely epic. And guys, in case you didn't understand from that very intrinsic rhyme, we have very special guest Phil Geiger joining us from Unchained. That's right.
Dude, gentlemen,
how's it going, man?
It's going great. Thank you guys so much for having me. And I didn't realize that we were going to drop such a sick rhyme to kick off our podcast here. So well done on that.
Oh man, he surprises me every time. So yeah, that was absolutely epic. All right. So look, we're going to bring Phil right through the gauntlet. Here we go. We are diving into the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers, of course, brought to us by Time Chain Stats and Time Chain Calendar. Phil, what do they look like this week?
At the time of this recording, the block height is 787,394. The Bitcoin price, 29,350. The total public Lightning capacity, 5,385.35. Moscow time, 3408. Chain rewrite days, 717. And I just want to go back and say it was the fiat Bitcoin exchange that was 29K. Apologize. We have to be thorough, right? It's not the price. It's just a Bitcoin fiat exchange or fiat Bitcoin exchange. Phil, is it Bitcoin fiat?
Go on.
Yeah, it's hard to measure Bitcoin in a currency that changes supply all the time. So I just like to think in sats. Like how many sats do I have?
Sats the standard. And if I understood correctly, you are in a very special location joining us, right? You're in the Bitcoin Commons.
That's right. I'm here in the recording studio at the Bitcoin Commons in downtown Austin, Texas. So across the street is Consensus Conference this week. And I said, no, thank you to the NFTs. I wanted to be here in the Bitcoin Commons recording Bitcoin content.
Nice, nice. Okay, so look, I know that we're supposed to dive into the numbers, but since you mentioned NFTs, I now have to ask you your thoughts on ordinals. What are your thoughts? Ordinals, shitcoin, not a shitcoin. What are your thoughts?
They're just so boring. I think people can get excited about them, and you know, it's paying the Bitcoin transaction fees, and so it doesn't bother me. It's all within consensus rules, but it's just like, it's just not interesting to me at all. It's like, okay, cool, you have a little NFT. I mean, I think there's some small use cases with like embedding, you know, Chancellor on the brink of bailouts into the blockchain and like a few other things like that. But there's just, it has all the same problems as any other NFT, which is that all you're proving is that these things existed at a given time. You're not proving that you created them, that they're accurate, that, you know, they're, you know, X, Y, or Z. It's just kind of, it's a digital receipt. And that's not that interesting to me.
I totally agree. Very well said. Very well said. Okay. We're going to take a look over here.
It's an example of, So basically all shitcoinery, it comes down to two things. You don't understand math and you don't understand the Oracle problem. And this is both. So yeah, get wrecked.
But what do you mean, Walton? They solved the Oracle problem. Crickets.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the same. It's like just a collectible. It's like I never owned Beanie Babies growing up. I never owned really. Well, I guess I had a few Pokemon cards. It's like people get excited about collectibles. And I think there's potentially some interesting use cases, but it's just not that interesting to me overall. It's like, you know, like I think it's kind of cool that somebody embedded a Tiananmen Square photo onto the blockchain. It's like that exists. Now the ownership of it, it's sort of like, you know, the blockchain is like a bathroom stall, you know, a public restroom. You can just like engrave your name on it. And like, there's always going to be people that just like engrave their name on like a, you know, old growth tree or a bathroom stall. It's the same thing with the Bitcoin blockchain. Like you can get frustrated by it or you can just kind of deal with it and move on. That's kind of the way I feel about it. It's like not interesting to me. It's interesting to some people. Great.
You know, to your point about the bathroom stall, they're just impressing people taking poops, right? Let's be honest, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean
they're called shitcoins for a reason, Phil. They're called shitcoins for a reason.
They are shitcoins for a reason. Okay, so we're going to dive into our first article here for the numbers. Here we go. All right, I lied. It's not an article. It's just a picture. But take a look at this. This is actually pretty interesting from @SteelDaddy. So here we go. I work at McDonald's, and we have these little cards that we give to customers when we fuck up their order that lets them redeem the card for a free Big Mac. Just recently, we received a box of these special coins. They're going to serve the same purpose. If you have one of the coins, you can exchange it for a Big Mac. It's for the 50th anniversary of the Big Mac. Now, I'm far from an economics expert, so this may just be a stupid question, but since our money has no value anymore since it was taken off the gold standard, whereas these coins from McDonald's are backed up by Big Macs, Does that make them a more stable currency than our money? I got to be honest. You can eat a Big Mac. I mean, it's...
So and
it's
they also really, don't degrade.
It's not good money, but somehow it's better money. Sorry, Walton.
Do you know that? They actually don't degrade. So they actually have temporal... what do you call it? You know... they're able to survive through time. No, seriously, there's like one like in like a I don't know if it's in a museum in like I want to say like Iceland or something where they got rid of McDonald's. It's like there's some burger that was like made 10 years ago and it just doesn't decay because it's just like so chemically that like all of the like bacteria and fungi and whatever that normally decompose things just are like no, I'm good. Like it's insane. I don't know. I'm pretty wrong on some of the numbers in the country, but like look it up. There's somewhere there's some Big Mac that's like yeah, like 10 years old and just sits there like.
That's how they measure the weight of a Big Mac is the prototypical Big Mac that's like a decade old. I think
that's the Big Mac that's kept in like underground in Paris, like in a vault. Yeah,
armed guards. Oh yeah, of course. Retina scans.
Standard Big Mac. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I got to be honest, guys. I don't think Big Macs are a great form of money. And, you know, I'm going to maybe put on my like economics glasses here and just say that they keep swapping out different aspects of the Big Mac over time. So the quality of the Big Mac meat has degraded. The buns are now made, I think, of 80% sawdust. They don't really have any vegetables on them anymore. It's just like grated up kind of sludge. And so, you know, you might be able to redeem it for a Big Mac, but what's that Big Mac going to even be in the future? Is it just a pile of goo? Is it a hose, a Big Mac hose? I don't know.
So what you're saying, Phil, is that you used to like Big Macs because they had vegetables in them, and now you don't like Big Macs because they turn people into vegetables. Is that an accurate summary?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Are you a vegetable maximalist?
I'm a quinoa maximalist.
Quinoa. High in protein, right? I'm not mistaken.
High in protein, low in fun.
Definitely low in fun, I gotta be honest. Like, nobody's ever inspiring me with quinoa. Like, they're not showing up to the party and being like, I've got this amazing quinoa dish. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah, it's like someone who's like, hey, do you like Cress? You're like...
I guess.
All right, so quinoa may be a shitcoin or partially, but it's good for your health, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's debatable.
But then you have to tell people about it. It's like being a vegan or CrossFit. It's just...
But let's get back to the Big Mac standard, guys. The Big Mac, there's serious shrinkflation in Big Macs, and the quality of them are degrading over time. Bad form of money. I'm going to stick with Bitcoin.
Okay, so I was going
to
say,
actually,
so
if you go to timechainstats.com, you go to the homepage of timechainstats.com, you can actually see how much a Bitcoin is worth in Big Macs, I believe, based on, you know, the average US price or something like that. But of course, there is a Big Mac index globally.
Walton, do you happen to have a link for us today?
I do indeed.
Very nice. Let me
pull this up.
Sweet.
I want to talk about time. Here's a little thread, as much as I dislike threads, here's quite a good one from some guy, I don't know. You can read his name at the top. The Time Billionaire. So what's this all about? Everyone can picture, okay, how long is, you know, 1,000 seconds? Well, there's 3,600 seconds in an hour, so 1,000 seconds is like, what, 18 minutes or something. How long is 1,000,000 seconds? It's like a couple of weeks, but a billion seconds is very, 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 very long. So a billion seconds is slightly over 31 years. So if you're a time billionaire, then you still have that many seconds remaining in your life. You could argue essentially there are you live to 90 approximately, and so you have 3 billion seconds in your life. People think about wealth in terms of money, but ultimately what you should be trying to become more sovereign over is your time. There's different ways to do this, right? But do you really want to be one of these people who's kind of trying to buy it back later? You need to be valuing your time from the start. And so I think individuals need to recognize that time is more precious to them, is more scarce to them than this is something I've talked about before. Your own time is more scarce than Bitcoin. Now, you know that Bitcoin is finite, like truly finite. Your time is more scarce. because you will always be able to acquire a little bit more Bitcoin in some way, shape, or form. You can't always acquire more time. And so that's what we're looking at today. Now, I think, yeah, he says, too many people fail to recognize the value of this until it's gone. Okay. Here's a life calendar. Each box is a week. That's kind of crazy, seeing the number of weeks in your life. It could be on one sheet of paper. Kind of crazy.
Dude, I'm like speechless.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Look at just how time gets spent. People say, okay, time spent for children, apparently this is the flow of it. So I guess this is, you know, people having their children in their late 20s, early 30s, spending a lot of time with them. And then as the children get older and the parents get older, they spend less time with them. Time spent with family, just in general, over the course of your life, decreases. Like, yeah, you spend a bunch of, obviously, you know, you're living with them, and then you, but in general, you spend less and less time with family. Why does that matter? Well, diminishing time with family and children is mainly spent by being alone. And that increases over your life. You spend more and more time alone. So, like, what's the point of this all? Blah, 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 blah. I'll scroll down a little bit.
What does this all mean, Walton?
What does this all mean?
What does this all mean?
Means I'm going to cancel RSVP to your birthday party. Time is scarce. I don't want to spend it at your party.
Yeah. Time is scarce. Do you want to be one of these people that apparently everyone is, that spends more and more time alone and less time with everyone? Except for this, like, you know, bunch in the middle where you spend too much time with coworkers. Like, what matters to you? Does it matter, like, acquiring an extra, you know, I don't know, 10,000 sats, million sats, or does it matter spending a bit more time with those that you care about? Like, don't, at the end of the day, yeah, Bitcoin is an immutable ledger that removes the need for money, such that you can call it money maybe, but you know, what's the point of it all? Well,
I think, like, the way that I think about this is, I just want to be using my time in a way where if I reflect back on the time that I've spent, I'm proud of my accomplishments and the things that I've done with that time. So I really focus on, like, for my job, for example, am I doing something that I think is solving one of the biggest problems in the world, or am I contributing to something that I think is a greater than myself? Am I building that cathedral? Mm-hmm. And then when I think about personal experiences, I'm like, am I spending enough time with my family? Am I giving, you know, my family the life that they deserve? And then for myself, it's like, am I pushing myself physically? Am I staying in shape? Am I doing, like, you know, achieving personal challenges and stuff like that? And I don't know. I think that's kind of my stacking sets. That's kind of like the meaning of life. It's like, did you live the life that fulfills you?
I think that's a very good point. And another way that I explain it is, you have to live a life worth living, right? And that is relative to you and what it is that, you know, that you want, you know, out of life. But I think, Walton, I think it's extremely interesting that you bring this this up this week for the numbers, you know, based on just life, right? Life happening. And I got to say this, right? Like, somehow. I don't know if it's to say, like, as a society or as a culture, but somehow we've been tricked, right? We've either tricked ourselves, or we've been tricked with, you know, certain types of media or whatever it may be. But essentially, we've been fooled out of our time, and we've essentially, for a great majority, have chosen to replace this incredibly finite, incredibly precious thing with absolute crap. You know, like, I'm talking about the money that we have, right? The debasement that we have. Like, you know, if I was my father, right, or something like that in my 70s, and I came to the realization that all that money that I worked for is now worth 100 times less, like, why would I deserve that, right? Like, that's a sick, twisted, shitty thing. And it doesn't make it any better that we all share it somehow, you know, but some of us share it less because we're closer to the money spigots. So we have it a little bit less. So we think it's okay. Like, this is crap. Like, to me, it just goes to show where we are consciously And again, how this relates to Bitcoin is that I think Bitcoin is one of those, you know, one of those things where it's going to help us consciously, because we're going to have this better money and therefore should incentivize better, I think, better thoughts, better quality thoughts, and better quality behavior.
I like the concept of inflation as time theft, because like you spend your day like toiling, right, in X, Y, or Z manner to deliver value to other people. And for that effort that you've expended, you receive money, a token. And then for someone else, some asshole sitting at a computer to be able to just like, with the stroke of a few keys, steal that value from you is horrific. I think it's an abomination.
Guys, I agree, but the point of me sharing this article was not about the basement. Like, I agree. We talk about this all the time. Time gets stolen from us by some wankers, like, you know, close to politicians. But that's not what my point is about. My point is about, yes, that's true. But you as individuals, you as Bitcoiners, if you truly recognize the value of your time, you need to stop stealing the time from yourselves. You need to stop, you know, I mean, we all fucking scroll on Twitter, but like, take action. You got to be bold.
I think to summarize, you're saying hashtag YOLO.
Yeah, be here now.
No, I'm not saying hashtag YOLO. I'm saying...
Explain it, Walter.
Work out what's important and get to work on the low time preference goals. I'm saying be high time preference with your activity. Be high time preference with your urgency, but low time preference with your goals.
Very well said. Very well said.
Amen.
Up next, we have Wrecked, sponsored by Represent. Represent is a brand that represents values, that represents proof of work, that represents caring, that represents not just doing the minimal, that represents quality, that represents relationships. What do you represent? Now, if you want to buy some excellent apparel from an excellent brand, head over to representltd.com and use the code PlebUnderground for a discount on all the goodies. Once again, that's representltd.com. Welcome back to Wrecked. This week, I'm going to do something slightly different. We often look at examples of, you know, shitcoiners and things in the fiat world getting wrecked. And maybe we laugh at it. Maybe we warn about it, but it's a little bit high time preference wrecked. And
it's a shit coin.
It's not a shit coin, because we'd fuck shitcoins.com. Please like and subscribe. No shit coins around here.
Everyone has their shit coin though. Like, you know, it's just like, this is the shit coiny aspect of my life. It's the, you know, it's the wrecked segment.
Like, I don't know. But again, it's like, if you really appreciate something.
Yeah.
You know, be wary of the monetary premium on it, but don't not enjoy it. And this is kind of my point. What is it all for? Like, we say, good, don't get wrecked. Okay, fine. You know how to kind of not get wrecked financially, right? You know, take more sovereignty, buy Bitcoin, you know, take self-custody, run your own node, you know, use like Zeus and Nunchuck. Actually, they just came out with some really awesome new update with incredible, like the world-class coin control, Nunchuck. And yeah, like you can set up your own, you know, multi-sig on a mobile phone. Anyone can fucking, boomers can do multi-sig with Nunchuck. And now they've got, yeah, world-class coin control. Go check it out. But you already know all this stuff, guys. How else can you not get wrecked in life? That's what I want to talk about this week. And yeah, we've already talked a little bit about this kind of stuff in the numbers section. But that's because I wanted to talk about this and then, you know, I just let it bleed into this the other section as well, because your life should not be molded on the lives of others. You need to work out what's important to you and get after it. Save in Bitcoin, but don't forget what it's all for. Choose how to spend your time, but be bold, have new experiences, learn from pain, and love those important to you. How do we not get wrecked in other areas of our life? That's what I want to talk about this week. So obviously, you should be working out, right? You should be looking after your diet. You should be getting more sleep. Yes, I'm talking to myself on that last one. There are different factors that you need to do to maximize your quality of life that Bitcoin doesn't fix. You fix them. Bitcoin can mean that you don't have to worry about some other things, so that you can then take the time to fix these things. So you need to be working on yourself, building strength in a number of different ways, and then you help those around you. Guys, what can we do as individuals to reduce us getting wrecked in other areas? We know how to do the Bitcoin thing, right? But that's not what life's about. Bitcoin enables some of the life stuff, but how do you prevent that stuff from getting rugged?
Phil,
I'll take a stab at this one. Yeah, I think one of the things that I live my life by is, I'm not a fan of Taleb at all, but I love the concept of anti-fragility, where you actually
anti-fragile.
No, so it's like, yeah, complete nonsense. Well, I don't even think the book is good. Like, anti-fragile could have been a tweet, which is that, you know, you get stronger based on external pressures. That's it. And the book is kind of a just
mental circle jerk.
I didn't say it.
I did.
Yeah. Interesting though. But so I really like to think about that, and especially when like banks are collapsing and things are getting worse out there and people are kind of like not figuring out what's going on. I try to find out ways that I can, you know, make my living situation, my life more anti-fragile. So if something does happen catastrophically, then I'm okay, or I'm actually in a better position. I don't have any specific examples to share right now, but it's just something I like internalize.
So I think one example that we can think about is like cash flow, or like, you know, the whole like get on zero thing. Like, I try and have, you know, not very much fear at all, but how much should you have for expenses? Should you have 1 month, 2 months, 3 months? You know, only you as an individual can work this out. And to some degree, yes, you're taking on risk in different places. People say, oh, you should just, you know, DCA, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's no. Any sort of accumulation strategy is a trading strategy. I don't care what you say, you're wrong. Like, even if you DCA, you're choosing to do that over lump sum or whatever, over smash buying, whatever it is, you are choosing some sort of strategy. You need to choose a strategy for a number of different things in life, and you need to choose how much risk you're willing to take on. But it's how... If you look at, say, the business world, people think, oh, the best entrepreneurs, they're taking on loads of risk. No, they work out how to take calculated risks better than others. You need to apply this kind of thinking to a number of different areas in your life. That's what I mean by being bold. You have to take risks, but don't take risks for things that aren't worth it.
So I would also...
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
I would also just say that not taking risks is risking the scarcest asset of your life, which is your time. Like, if you just live a sedentary life and you don't take any risks, you haven't created any life experiences. What can you look back on and be proud of? Like,
fail, but you didn't try either. So, you know,
you didn't do anything. Yeah. So I love that idea of like calculated risk. Like, everybody is taking risks, and you have to just understand what the risk that you're taking is. There's a risk to not making a decision or not taking action.
So I think that's very important that you bring that up, and because it has to do with, okay, so look, right? We are all, to a certain extent, right, going to take risks, and we have to figure out what the quality of those risks are. So the first step, right, is informing ourselves to the best of our ability, right? Because again, this goes back to Walton's point about people who essentially take risks for a living. Let's be honest, right? If you're not informing yourself, then you're just being reckless, right? And even though it's cool to be reckless with Lightning, sometimes it's not that cool. Because in life, okay, if you go about it haphazardly and you take major risks, you could end up, losing the most precious asset, which is your time, you know? So it's, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I'm just thinking about, purchasing stupid stocks, certain things, just not informing yourself properly and just taking ridiculous risks. Like, for example, the first stock I ever bought, I didn't inform myself correctly. I just bought it because Warren Buffett was tied to it, right? This is back in 2005 or something like that. And it went straight to zero. Literally, it's still sitting in my Canadian investing account. I can't do anything with it. It just sits there. And it's a constant reminder. It just sits there at zero. And that's because I did not inform myself and I took on a major risk. And that wasted my most precious asset, which was my time.
Yeah, so guys, buy Bitcoin, fuck shit coins, and focus on using your time as effectively as you can. Work out what your mission is. Get to it.
Very well said. Very well said. I like that.
All right. And this was Wrecked. Sponsored by Represent.
All right. We are going to move on over to our interview discussion with the, I believe it's the head of product marketing at Unchained, Phil Geiger. So Phil, tell us, you know what? I want to start with, what is it that you do at Unchained?
Well, I've had a lot of roles at Unchained. I was a very early employee, number, I think, 11, and helped grow the company to, we just announced our Series B this week, or I guess it was last week now. I don't know what day it is. And I've kind of had multiple different roles. I started trying to grow the marketing engine for our Vault custody platform, where clients hold two keys. They have full control of their Bitcoin, but they have Unchained holding one key as a backup, two out of three keys.
Through multisig is a phenomenal model. I used to be a former customer of the other one that did it now very terribly. So fuck them. So guys, if you want collaborative custody on your 2 of 3 multisig, go to Unchained. Phil, back to you.
Yeah, thank you. And I think what separates us is we've always been laser focused on Bitcoin. We actually, that's not totally true. When the company was founded, we actually did offer support for Ethereum, but realized very quickly that was not the direction that we as a company were going to go. And so we dropped that support.
Having Bitcoin and Ethereum to just Bitcoin, that direction.
At this point, it's ancient history for Unchained. That was 2018, I think. 2019 is when we cut support.
I just mean it's interesting that you went that direction rather than going, say, from being Bitcoin only to then doing Bitcoin and Ethereum. That's that direction, the ethical,
makes sense. So we're a security first company, and you can't do multi-signature on Ethereum because it's not part of the Ethereum protocol. It's not native to it like it is with Bitcoin. So when you're doing multi-sig in Ethereum, you typically are relying on your custodian. Like, what if they disappear? What happens if the smart contract stops working? Ethereum, one of the biggest hacks in Ethereum history was somebody just locking Ethereum multisig funds and they're just stuck there. That's not possible with Bitcoin because, again, it's native. It's part of Bitcoin. And so if Unchained had any sort of issue where you didn't trust Unchained, or Unchained, if Austin, Texas was struck by a meteor, you have your two keys. You have the information you need to move your Bitcoin. That's just not the case necessarily with Ethereum. And it's just not a security posture that we're comfortable with, on top of the protocol itself just changing constantly. It just has completely changed. You can't be self-sovereign over something that somebody else can just rug pull you on.
I thought it was ultrasound money, though. I mean, I keep seeing that on Twitter. I'm totally confused.
Yeah, it's...
You just explained this. I didn't even, I got to be honest with you, and this is my own ignorance. I thought that you could do everything from Bitcoin with Ethereum because it's so much better. So you explaining that they can't do freaking multisig. So what the fuck is Casa doing with these idiots?
Like, you know, I can't speak to Casa's strategy. Like, yeah, it's just
right. What are they doing with these people?
Who? Yeah. So, anyways, I joined Unchained around 2019 and helped to grow the custody platform. Then I launched the concierge program with other colleagues, which we actually teach you how to take self-custody over your Bitcoin. We'll send you hardware wallets. We'll help you set them up. We'll help you secure your seed phrase. We'll talk about it, kind of inheritance situation. And then we'll help you move Bitcoin from a custodian into your control. So that's the concierge program. And then now I'm kind of leading our product marketing efforts. So just figuring out how to communicate each of our product lines to our clients and build out that engine there.
Perfect segue, Phil. I noticed that you use the term hardware wallet. Now, I'm a big proponent of the term signing device over hardware wallet. There is a degree of the term hardware wallet is a bit established, but I do think signing device better represents kind of what it does, especially because it works for all of them.
Some things
store keys, so it's a key ring, but not everything is right. A seed signer doesn't store the keys. Different things have different kind of functions. And of course, the Bitcoin isn't stored in it. So I don't like the term wallet. I really don't like it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a totally.
Where do you stand on the debate and as kind of chief of
Yeah, so
will you be implementing this terminology?
So wallet is a loaded and very bad term in Bitcoin. It's used everywhere. Like the best definition for a Bitcoin wallet that I have come up with that I'm happiest with, it's not perfect, is your Bitcoin wallet is a series of addresses that you can control with your keys. And it couldn't be one key or it could be many keys. So you could have a single signature wallet where the series of Bitcoin addresses are controlled by one primary key.
Interesting. I have a completely different idea. To me, and it's the thing that you use to look up your series of addresses. Like it's usually a piece of software that you use that you need to kind of give your XPub to, whether you're running it yourself or someone else's, but that then, and it's like the banker is the wallet.
So, I would call that piece of software your wallet coordinator. You take your XPubs, your seed phrase, or if it's multi-sig, your wallet file, and you load it into your wallet coordinator. It can read the information and go and look up your series of addresses and then display you your balance. And then you can use your... So I think
is
signing...
private key your wallet then?
No, not necessarily. Because in a multi-signature wallet, for example... Your private key is one of M keys that are needed to spend Bitcoin that is part of your wallet. So wallet is a very, very loaded term and it's used in way too many places in Bitcoin.
That's the primary reason I don't like it. For the specific, devices, fine, call them hardware devices if you don't like signing device, but
so
try and remove wallet from the term for these devices.
The problem with the term signing devices is that signing transactions is one of many very important functionality features that a hard signing device. they're really like, I kind of call
addresses,
them,
Well,
generating your seed phrase. So not all devices generate your seed phrase, but most of them are relied upon to generate your seed phrase. A lot of them store your seed phrase, not the seed signer. And then they're used to share XPubs with coordination software to build your wallet. They're used to sign transactions. And very importantly, they're used to verify your Bitcoin addresses. So before you send an immutable transaction of potentially your net worth to a destination Bitcoin address, you really want to check to make sure that you have the key to that address. Otherwise, you've just sent the Bitcoin somewhere that you don't have control, right? So a device is really important for that feature as well. And so a signing device is maybe better, but it's still missing a lot of the other functionality. If I were to propose a term, I would say key manager, key management device. It's kind of clunky though. It's not a great term. And so we're kind of stuck.
More like signing devices, because it's a bit like, we can talk to boomers understand the concept of signing a check. And so to me, it's that kind of analogy will translate well for the kind of older generations, and for younger ones, they can pick it up. They can understand that if it's not in there, that maybe wallet's not the best term.
I can get that. Yeah. And I think I have problems with hardware device, because that's actually it's a meaningless term. Like, yeah, hardware exactly. Is a device.
Yeah.
So hardware device is just like, doesn't quite work for me. But it's a really tough problem. And it's like something that I've spent a lot of time just trying to like navigate my way through. So don't have a perfect answer for you there. And then the other thing that you touched on, which is really interesting, is creating analogies in Bitcoin is extremely challenging. And it's something that I spent years working on with the concierge team. It's like, how do you describe multi-signature to people who are potentially non-technical? This is maybe their first experience with Bitcoin. How do you describe multi-sig to them in a way that makes sense? And it is an extremely difficult problem to solve. So
just use something with like multiple padlocks that are interlocked, and you can actually have a physical thing where you could unlock, you know, a certain amount of them, and it will unlock the whole thing. There is a physical way to do this.
The way that I like to kind of describe the analogy is a Bitcoin address, and I like to just focus on one address at a time. A Bitcoin address is like a treasure chest, and you can build that treasure chest from one key or with one key or from many keys. So in the type of Bitcoin address that we help you build at Unchained, it's a multi-signature address. We build a treasure chest that has two locks, three keys. Any two out of three of those keys can unlock the treasure chest. And in order to build that treasure chest, we have to take locks produced from your key, right? So your private key is your key. A public key is that lock that the key can fit in. And we take your public keys and we package them together into a treasure chest. And then you have the keys to unlock it, or you have two out of three keys.
Do they not ask what happens to the third one if there's only two locks?
It's like an imperfect analogy, right? It's like, it's kind of three locks.
Addresses as like, imagine like a room with almost infinite, it's not infinite, right? But virtually infinite safety deposit boxes, and when you make a Bitcoin transaction, you essentially clear out one of them, and it then, you know, goes into other safety deposit boxes, and you can kind of post things in, but you can't take things out unless you unlock the padlocks on the outside. And if you have multi-sig, then you've got multiple padlocks on the same thing. And I don't know, to me it's like, okay, then you can extend it. Okay, well then a banker to me is like the wallet software, and the bank is like the node. So if you want privacy, then you need to go and look in the box within your own node, whereas if you are using your own wallet software but you're using someone else's node, then you're able to kind of go and browse access to, you know, and use your Bitcoin, but you're doing it within someone else's bank, and so they can watch what you're doing. But these, as you say, so, these analogies, you know.
Yeah, I might even kind of go deeper there, where if you have the keys and you have checked your addresses on your keys, you know with total certainty that any Bitcoin that is living in that address is yours, because you have confirmed the address on your devices. Now, what you can't confirm unless you run your own node is if that address has received real Bitcoin. Like, you know that you have control of the address, but unless you're checking on your node, you don't know if you have actually received real Bitcoin or if whatever tool you're using is lying to you.
If you tried a few different block explorers, though, could you not kind of deduce? I mean, I guess you're kind of trusting between them, but I know what you're saying. Like,
To
me, the privacy aspect is one to highlight, though, with the node.
Yeah, and I think on the, yes, so it's all a risk spectrum, right? Like, if you check your balances on like five different nodes, then you can be pretty certain that your address has the amount of Bitcoin that you expected to have. To know with 100% certainty, you got to check on your own node. But if you're like, okay, six different block explorers are telling me the exact same thing, you probably have that Bitcoin. Now, to your second point, the privacy aspect, I think, is pretty interesting as well. Running a node doesn't really impact like your privacy in terms of receiving Bitcoin, but it does impact your privacy.
Your IP linked to you checking a particular transaction on a public block explorer, I think, does have privacy implications versus using your own node behind Tor or whatever.
I was talking kind of more about sending Bitcoin to your address, right? Like, you don't need your own node to privately send Bitcoin from an exchange to your address. You do need a full node if you want to hide your activity once the Bitcoin is kind of in your wallet, right? If you want to send transactions and nobody can log your IP address, that's when you want to be sending it from your own node and not going through a partner.
What is the most common, question or concern that you get from people potentially looking to use an unchained service, like a custodial service?
Well, partially custodial. Yeah. It's like, we call it collaborative custody.
Collaborative
because
custody. Thank
you. You have full control. Yeah. You have full control of the Bitcoin, but you're working with a partner. Now, there is always going to be a trade-off whenever you're working with a partner. And the trade-off there is the partner, especially in multi-sig, is going to see the transactions that are all happening, right? So you're giving up some information about your balances and the transactions. Now, there's a lot of benefits that you get from including a partner, which is that we have like we have multiple teams of experts that if you make a mistake with your Bitcoin, you just hop on the call with us and we will help you recover and walk you through all these different things. We'll train you up to be able to hold the keys on your own, and then we'll be there in the long term to be able to support you. Another really, really important benefit of collaborative custody, in my opinion, is this inheritance situation. You can be the most technical Bitcoiner, ANCAP mountain man in the entire world, but if you die, do your loved ones have a pathway to recover the Bitcoin? And there's like the inheritance problem is, I think, a pretty big rabbit hole, especially for self-custodied Bitcoin. So in Bitcoin, if you don't have the keys to the Bitcoin, it's not your Bitcoin. But if you have keys to the Bitcoin, or if you've stolen someone's keys, you have the keys to that Bitcoin, you can control it, but you don't have the legal title to that Bitcoin. It's like if you go in and rob somebody's house and steal a bar of gold, you're holding the gold, but you're not the owner of the gold, right? So that person can find you and sue you and get ownership of the gold. Same thing with Bitcoin. If you don't have legal title to that Bitcoin, then, the person who does have legal title to that Bitcoin could potentially like take you to court and sue you. So this is a really big problem in the inheritance situation, where if you die and you haven't said like, this person is supposed to have my Bitcoin, all of your heirs could get involved in like legal battles and so on and so forth. And then the worst part about it is if that happens, a lot of that information becomes public record. So now you can see, okay, this person now has this much Bitcoin, and you just go to your local government office and they just have that information. They'll just serve it up to you. So inheritance in Bitcoin is like a really tough nut to crack. And we've been focusing on that aspect a lot recently at Unchained.
So are you guys going to have like a new different type of service offering specifically for that? Or do you already have that?
We already have, we're most of the way there. So we have the inheritance protocol, which helps take care of the key aspect, making sure that the key is safely secured and distributed to an heir who then has a very easy pathway to get to recover the Bitcoin. And we also have trust accounts. So if you've formed a trust as part of your estate plan and you pair that trust account with the inheritance protocol, you're great. If you just have a will, you can set up a personal account, and the will plus the protocol, the inheritance protocol, is a really good solution for you, except for your estate is going to go through, or could go through, probate after you pass. And probate is where public records become a thing. So there's like, there's good solutions there, but inheritance is all like a comprehensive inheritance solution is always going to be both of those things. It's not just possession of the keys. It's also like, legally, is that person supposed to have the keys?
I really appreciate you explaining that. And you can, you know, just based on what you're explaining, I can see that inheritance planning, like this is kind of like a bit of an uphill battle, but I feel like you guys have been focused on this, and I can see that you've definitely looked at multiple angles. So I'm not worried, right? Like, I'm not worried. Like, it seems like you guys are really paying attention to this, and I really,
yeah, thank you. Yeah. And we, and that's kind of like, that's kind of how we view Unchained, is we're a financial services company for Bitcoiners. Like, we are Bitcoiners. We are building out all of the different financial tools that Bitcoiners need on top of multi-sig, on top of the principles of, you know, private key ownership and sovereignty. Now, just like with anything, there are always trade-offs. So financial services, by definition, require like getting to, you know, this, I don't want to use the three-letter word, but like, they're KYC, right? Buying Bitcoin requires KYC in order to be able to legally offer financial services in the US. We have to comply with those regulations. But you can use those to your advantages in scenarios like inheritance. Like, the only way to comprehensively do scenario inheritance is to have that legal title, which is just by definition KYC, plus the keys. So as part of your strategy for Bitcoin, I think it's a really, really good thing to look into, because like, there's always going to be some aspect of your life that is going to be part of that KYC solution. It's just like how the world works today. You know, on top of stuff like that, I don't know where we started this question, but like, I'm just trying to think of other products that we have that are kind of leveraging this power. And the other one is our retirement product, our IRA. So an IRA is just by definition, like a regulated financial product. And a lot of Bitcoiners maybe are out of dry powder from their personal accounts, but have like an old 401k from an old employer or an old IRA. You can now take that and roll it into Bitcoin without having to pay the government massive amounts of taxes with the Unchained IRA. You still hold the private keys to your Bitcoin. You have all the tax advantages. So in a Roth, for example, if the price of Bitcoin skyrockets, you're not paying those capital gains taxes because you've already paid capital gains upfront. You're not paying the government that liquidation tax and the fee in order to like dump your 401k in order to buy personal Bitcoin. You just roll it right over into the Unchained IRA. You have the keys to your Bitcoin. So this is just another example of our approach. It's like Bitcoin native, but it's also kind of like navigating through the muddy waters of the legacy financial system.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. So Unchained, helping
just
us.
Just a brief note on to translate for the, for those of you in the UK or Europe, you may be confused by some of the terms here. An IRA roughly translates to a pension pot that is invested, and there's various forms where you have different rules on how much you can invest yourself, and the various tax benefits.
We are moving on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium
is brought to you by Crypto Cloaks. Check them out, cryptocloaks.com, also serving the EU, cryptocloaks.co.uk. Use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND for 5% off awesome 3D prints, such as the 3D printed grenade. That's right, you can store your open dime in there. I just saw Rick made an even bigger one that's like the size of a chair. Check that out. There's a mid-sized one where you can actually fit a signing device / hardware wallet. Check them out, cryptocloaks.com. For the Hopium this week, it's kind of a, I think it's kind of a funny one. I don't usually like to use any of the Winklevi tweets, but anyways, here we go. We're going to use a Cameron tweet. It's official. Crypto winter is over. Ugh, crypto. See what happens when you run shitty exchanges. You can't just say Bitcoin. You have to include all the crap that isn't Bitcoin that has nothing to do with what's really going on. Anyways, Let's just take a look at this absolute garbage. The crypto winter is over and Bitcoin could hit 100K by the end of 2024. I love projections. It's fantastic. And check out the reasons, okay? This is good. The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and other mid-tier U.S. lenders has solidified the case for Bitcoin as a decentralized, trustless, and scarce digital asset. Secondly, this coupled with a stabilization of risk assets and speculation that the Fed Reserve will ease monetary tightening further means the pathway to USD 100K level is becoming clearer. And then, of course, Bitcoin is up 66% since the start of the year. Okay, so, I mean, I am just going to, as much as this is the Hopium segment and we're all supposed to be super excited, which we're excited about Bitcoin no matter what. So every day is Hopium. It makes no difference. But I think that this is such funny legacy bullshit that's why I wanted to feature it. Like, they come up with all these legacy system reasons why Bitcoin's going to 100K. No, it doesn't matter. All of that other crap, like, why does anyone think Silicon Valley Bank has anything to do with any of this shit? Like, that to me is what I find absolutely mind-boggling. Like, okay. And what it does, hold on, Walton. What it does is it's a disservice to anybody paying attention, because the truth of the matter is that it creates a fake relationship that doesn't exist, and then people think that these institutions matter, and they don't. So, you know, WTF. Like, that's a load of bullshit.
The Winklevoss twins invented Facebook and then got rugged by Zuckerberg, and then he paid them off in 2008 for $65 million in cash and Facebook shares. And then they were buying Bitcoin from like 2011 to 2013. In 2013, they announced they had about $11 million in Bitcoin. Now, at the time, what was Bitcoin 2013, Phil? Like $100 roughly?
Yeah, $200, maybe, I think. Even.
Some of the stuff they'd bought for as little as $10. So you could say, okay, maybe they had like 100,000 coins. These days, it's estimated they have about 70,000 coins. So what this is all about is that they got rugged by Zuck, then they tried to rug him back, and then they rugged themselves, and then they gave a bunch of money to Barry as well and rugged themselves a bit more. And now they're trying to rug all of their customers by being shitcoiners when they could have just sat around with a shitload of Bitcoin. What idiots.
It's true. It's true. They could have just been solid signal, but instead they chose the path of the quote unquote dark side. Phil, what are your thoughts, man? 100K by what is it? Was it the end of 2024? I don't even know what they said.
I'd like to just get even more bullish and say the dollar is not the global reserve currency by 2030. I think it's Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is the primary global currency by 2030.
Boom. I like that. I like that a lot.
What's funny is it went
couple halvings.
Race they lost.
Well, look, you know what? We've talked about this in the past. There's rumblings, right, of the the ridiculous trades that have been made based on the yuan, right, with Russia and China, and because essentially those two countries are excluded from SWIFT anyways. So they're already using the Chinese transfer system. So I don't know how much weight I put on that, but I do agree with you that by 2030, we should see some action. We should definitely see some action.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I think, I was definitely thinking that Bitcoin was going to hit 100K by like a couple years ago, 2020, at the end of that bull run. And
it would have done if FTX hadn't sold a bunch of fake Bitcoin, which the price would have... People get this wrong. People say, oh, that meant that it went higher. No, if they're selling fake Bitcoin, then they're not actually buying real Bitcoin, in which case they're not actually like, they're not chomping at the supply, in which case the price, that could have gone way higher, but SPF stole it from you guys.
Yeah, sorry, my camera's starting to die. We're
not that we were gonna sell anyway, right? It'd be like, oh, 100K, okay. Now let's go be poor again, and then
Anytime I start to feel even remotely nervous about Bitcoin, I just increase my weekly DCA.
That's
lean into the pain.
Yes, you know what? The opposite of what our brain wants us to do, because really the average person is selling into loss and buying up. Right at the tops, because
I mean,
people want to buy assets that are going up, not going down. You know, yeah. Like
this isn't financial advice, by the way.
No, it's not financial advice. It's sad that we actually have to say that, right? Because we're just talking about Bitcoin. But yeah. Like, for some reason, it's so funny that we have to hide behind this, you know, behind this stupid, like, this is not financial advice. You know, it's like, really? But Cramer can sit there and wreck every freaking person on television with his MSN, you know, with his CNBC bullshit. Doesn't make any sense.
Here's some financial advice. Work out how much your time is worth to you and start selling it at more than that.
Boom. That's some good ones. That is some good financial advice, Walton. All right, guys. Look, that was a quick little Hopium segment. That wraps it up. We are moving on over to our BTC Pay Server monthly update. We've got 2 days ago, it looks like there's a new version of BTC Pay Server, version 1.9.2. Don't forget to check it out. So guys, if you are using BTC Pay Server for your business, don't forget to keep it up to date. And don't forget, BTC Pay Server is an open source project, which means they need our donations. So don't forget to donate to BTC Pay Server. And check them out because you can donate to them through OpenSats. All right? So OpenSats, also an open source project, right? So open source project helping to move donations to another amazing open source project. So guys, BTC Pay Server, check them out.
I feel I like how each update they do, they start with the bug fixes because bugs are meant to be fixed, not eaten, guys. Bugs are meant to be fixed, not eaten.
Very well said. Very well said. All right, guys. That wraps up today's episode of Pleb Underground. Phil, thank you so much for joining us. Shill your stuff. Where can people reach you? Where can they find Unchained? How do they get more secure multisig?
Guys, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me on. People can find me on Twitter at Phil_Geiger or my email, phil@unchained.com. And if you're looking for multisig to improve your Bitcoin security for a team of people at your back, check out unchained.com/concierge. That's our onboarding program. We'll help walk you through everything from A to Z, get you secure, and then we'll take good care of you for the long term. Thanks a lot, guys.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it. It's been fun. Talk to you later.
Take it easy.
Yeah, bye, guys.
Bye. Don't forget to like and subscribe. It helps us out. The YouTube algorithm is a crazy, crazy algorithm, and all your help is greatly appreciated. Don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. And I'm going to leave us with a little quote before I ask Walton for his take. And this was actually Walton's quote. Boomers can do multisig with nunchuck. All right, Walton, how do we finish this episode?
Value your time, but right. Also fuck shit coins. Fuck shit, like seriously, fuck them. Fuck those shit coins.
Value your time, fuck shit coins. Catch you guys next week.